Welcome back to Pracademically Speaking. Today, we begin with an unexpected question. Remember the movie Moneyball? It's a 2011 sports drama starring Brad Pitt about innovation and strategy based on a real story about the Oakland Athletics. The film describes how the team shook up the baseball world by embracing statistics and data to assemble a competitive team on a tight budget. Similarly, risk and need assessments have transformed how correctional agencies approach rehabilitation. Just as the Oakland A's use statistics to uncover undervalued players and maximize their team's potential, correctional professionals use comprehensive data gathered by risk needs assessments to evaluate an individual's likelihood of reoffending and pinpoint specific needs requiring intervention. The goal is recidivism reduction. This approach isn't just about statistics. It's about leveraging data-driven strategies to enhance public safety and support reintegration into society. Today, we're diving into the use of correctional risk and needs assessments at the PADOC. Let's get started.
Hello, I'm Ryan Tarkowski, Communications Director with the Pennsylvania DOC, and this is Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. We're at the headquarters of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections again, and here with me today is Dr. Zach Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton is a professor at the University of Nebraska.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Hamilton. We've also got Sean Hossman and Marjorie Rist from Vantage, a digital intelligence company. Vantage is responsible for the Strong R, the DOC's risk assessment tool. Mr. Hossman is the chief executive officer of Vantage, and Ms. Rist is Vantage's chief operating officer.
Hello, hello.
Good morning.
All right, so that was Mr. Hossman first and Ms. Rist second. Glad you guys could all join us. Let's start and telling our listeners a bit more about each of you. Dr. Hamilton, we're going to start with you. Can you tell us about your background and how you got started working in this industry of corrections and risk needs assessment and all that?
Sure. I am from Iowa. Received my master's and PhD from Rutgers in criminology and criminal justice. I used to work for an organization called NDRI in Manhattan that did a lot of correctional program evaluations, particularly around substance abuse and mental health. I then worked for the Center for Court Innovation around specialty courts before becoming a professor at Washington State University, which is where I met Robert Barnowski. And we began working on risk assessment work. Particularly, we started developing the Strong R for Washington State, which then proliferated into Nebraska and Tennessee and Pennsylvania. And now we're working on South Carolina.
Great. Now we'll go around the room. My left, your right. Let's go to Mr. Hossman. Same questions.
Absolutely. I got started really back in 1998 when we worked in Washington State to develop then the first fourth generation risk and needs assessment for juveniles that had been developed in the country. And interestingly, some of the connections is Dr. Barnowski, or Barney, as he liked to be called. And the work that we did there really was to evaluate three different programs that were evidence-based and try to find out which of the juveniles, the kids, were best suited for which program, and to try to get scientific about that. And then that same work, really evidence-based practices and what works and really the principles of effective intervention, risk need responsivity. We built, as a company, we built software and automation and frameworks of training, continuous quality improvement, and implementation. And we've proliferated that in many states, from Texas to Florida to Washington State, all the way through on the juvenile side, and then started doing a lot of adult work in adult systems in 2006.
Great. Thanks for all that information. Ms. Rist, can you tell us about your background and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, my background actually is more as a practitioner. I started out working in the public sector in a couple of different probation departments in California. Probation departments in California have a very broad set of responsibilities, basically all youth care or delinquency care, probation, informal supervision, institutions, et cetera, and then also a responsibility for adults that are on probation and then certain portions of adults that have returned from prison, as well as in one of the counties I worked in pretrial. So I had a very wide set of experience as a practitioner. I was struggling, I think, a lot with the shortages of resources like every department does, and looking for ways you could tell sort of experientially that one client is different than another, right? They're not all the same. And so how do you really use the limited resources you can to the best end, or you have to the best end? And at some point in my career, I figured out that academics had actually done some work on that. And so started applying that probably around 2006, and then was doing that, had some pretty good outcomes with implementation of risk and needs assessments, particular programming, et cetera. And then left the public sector in 2012 and started working for Vantage. And since then, I've worked in multiple states, mostly on the adult side, although with some juvenile experience as well.
Great. Nice to meet you all to learn a little bit about who you are. Now let's talk about what you do. I guess let's start with Dr. Hamilton. At a high level, can you tell us what is risk needs assessment?
Risk needs assessment is essentially the gathering of criminal history, characteristics, and attitudes of individuals that are under usually correctional supervision, although tools have expanded beyond those on correctional supervision, but usually on correctional supervision in order to predict their likelihood of recidivating, and examining their needs that represent program targets, which if taken care of, can eventually reduce their likelihood of risk.
So the idea, the end goal of everything is reducing recidivism.
Correct.
Okay. I get that. Thanks for that explanation. Next question. I don't know who wants to take it. It's all for all three of you, I guess. Why is the risk needs assessment important for an effective, successful correction system?
I'll go on a little bit of that. It's the foundational layer of everything else that we now know is research-based or evidence-based or best practice. And that is, if you're going to manage another human being, especially one that is presented with some kind of crime or some kind of difficulty, whether it be mental health or substance abuse or violence-related issues, then you really need to sort of comprehensively understand who that person is, what risks they present, what needs they present, how to mitigate their risks. In many cases, you have people that need some level of rehabilitation, whether it's because of their upbringing, it's because of trauma they've been experiencing, or it's because of just bad examples, gang affiliation, many things. But the risk and needs assessment begins your journey with them to understand all of these scientific-based, research-based characteristics and attributes of a human being so that you can manage them effectively. And by manage them effectively, that means that they become less of a danger to the public, they become less of a danger to themselves, they become less of a danger to staff, they become less of a danger to other people under the correctional care. So you're trying to reduce their risk the entire time that you're working with them, and constantly assessing who they are allows you to use accurate information to support them or to contain them or to rehabilitate them.
So all this information that you're using, the data that you're using to make these decisions, from what I'm hearing, it's not about taking the personal touch out of it, but it's using the science and the history and the data to back those decisions.
That's correct. In fact, I'll put it this way. Like I used to always give it to everybody else. I do want the officer's education. I want the officer's gut feel. I want the officer's experience. I want the officer's title. But I want to add one more thing, and that is a scientific-based risk and needs assessment that's accuracy is high. And all those things combined, we contribute another tool to this system, and it's an important tool.
I think what Sean's getting at there, if I can piggyback, is that all of those instincts that a correctional officer or a case manager typically have are mostly positive. The idea of a risk needs assessment, though, is to standardize all of those concepts so that everybody is on the same playing field and that the goalposts are all in the same position.
Great. We'll have more questions right after the break. Friends, don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
This is Ryan Tarkowski with Dr. Zach Hamilton, professor at the University of Nebraska, Sean Hossman, CEO of Vantage, and Marjorie Rist, COO of Vantage. We've got time for just a few more quick questions, and these are for all three of you. What is the Vantage system and the strong R? What advantages do... Let's start. Let's do one. These questions are for all three of you. Let's start with the first, maybe the easiest. What is the Vantage system and the Strong R?
I guess I'll take this one. The Strong R is it's a customized risk assessment system. I think people think of it as one assessment, but it is customized for each jurisdiction we go into. So in Pennsylvania's case, it was built largely using Pennsylvania's data and built for the priorities of Pennsylvania Department of Corrections so that it can meet the needs of both the folks that are working in the prisons as well as those that are working on the parole and community supervision end of things. So that's the assessment itself. And then it operates within a system we call Vantage Point. And Vantage Point is basically rehabilitative decision support. And what that means is that we take the information gleaned from the assessment as well as other data within Pennsylvania's data systems. And we use that information to help inform the next best decision rehabilitatively for inmates or people on parole and help staff to make some of those decisions. And essentially what that makes happen is we standardize a lot of decisions related to rehabilitation. It allows the agency to examine data related to exceptions to say policy or practice expectations and lets them sort of manage by exception. So it increases quite a lot of, I would say, effectiveness and efficiencies, I think, throughout the system. So that was a lot of word salad. We can ask questions or other people can throw in clarifications.
I do want to give you a chance to talk about what makes the Strong R risk needs assessment tool special and what it brings to the industry. But can you start with the name Strong R? Is that an acronym for something? What does that actually mean?
It's an acronym for Static Risk and Offender Needs Guide, which was an early iteration of the tool. And we revised it and now started customizing it together so much that the Strong dash R for revised became the name. And since it kind of denotes stronger, we liked it. And so we've kept it ever since.
I got to be honest, I hear it in meetings and stuff that, because a lot of this technical stuff I kind of zone out on, I'm going to be honest with you, when I'm sitting in the meetings. So I love the chance to get to learn more about it today. And I've always wondered where the name Strong R came from. So that's going to be my number one takeaway. But for the smarter folks that are listening to the podcast, can you guys tell us what does the Strong R bring to the industry that maybe wasn't there before?
Well, I think that it's a good segue to talk about the name, because the rationale for the development of the Strong R was based on Washington State's evaluation of their own risk needs assessment tool. Specifically, they were using the level of service inventory revised and found some, for lack of a better term, mediocre results in terms of its prediction. And this is when the Washington State Institute of Public Policy and Dr. Robert Barnowski were brought in to develop a static tool that sort of expanded the number of items and responses that were not being captured within the LSIR, particularly around criminal history indicators. When they did that, they realized that they were leaving behind a lot of those needs assessment items that the LSI is known for. And so they put together a team of subject matter experts within the Department of Corrections in Washington and created a pool of over 100 items. Flash forward to 5 to 8 years is when I came in and when Sean and Marjorie came in. And we took that big pile of data and analyzed it, refined it, and identified a very specific statistically focused solution to reweight all of those items and make it a tool that would fit the best for Washington State. As we've taken that tool to other states, we realize that we've got to recustomize it or redesign it every time we move it. We want to make sure that it's perfectly suited and fit for that state, where I think a lot of the other tools sort of leave this element behind of customization to where a tool might be developed in Canada or Ohio or somewhere else, and they assume that it's going to work the same way with different demographics and a different population. We don't make that assumption, and we take data locally.
What kind of things changes? What kind of items change from one space to another? What might be different in Pennsylvania than, say, California?
Sure. Well, I can tell you in particular that the original Strong R that was built in Washington State at that time had a pretty substantial property crime problem. And so the frequencies and percentages of all of their elements around property crime were much higher than that of, say, Nebraska or Tennessee, where we implemented Next. Tennessee had issues or really a motivation or focus to sort of reduce domestic violence. Nebraska had its own priorities. So every time you move from place to place, you see a different set of demographics in terms of racially, in terms of gender, and you also have differences in terms of the jurisdictions that you're working with. Some are sort of those big totalities of correctional systems where it's probation, parole, prisons all in one. Some are just probation, some are just parole. And so each jurisdiction has its own unique tendencies in which the tool needs to be fitted to respond to.
Very good. I think we got a good understanding of where we are with risk needs assessment. What's next? What's on the cutting edge? Where do we see the future going?
You want me to take that one too?
Well, we can both do a few things on that. Go ahead. Hit it.
Well, I think one of the biggest issues that has been brought up in the last 5 to 8 years, and this was following a reporting by ProPublica, in which there's been an understanding of racial bias that's sort of engendered within the criminal history indicators of tools. And so essentially your tool is much a reflection of your population or your jurisdiction, or really the law enforcement and judicial practices that occur. So as those biases and disproportionalities work their way through the system, they eventually work their way into your tool. What we've identified are ways of reducing racial bias by essentially trying to flood the system with as many needs items as we can, trying to reduce the influence of those criminal history indicators as much as we can, and try to increase the amount of needs items that are collected, because they tend to not have the same amount of bias within them. The other elements that we're working on is trying to identify that all of those static items that you can't program or set an intervention to reduce, those static criminal history indicators or even just general static indicators, those aren't as helpful moving forward. And so there's ways of turning those static indicators into dynamic items by identifying how long ago they occurred for an individual. And so trying to identify the decay of those elements as you move forward is sort of the next version, I think, that we're working towards. Sean, you can jump in there.
Yeah, if it's okay, I think those are all exactly right. That's very cutting edge. These are unbelievable sort of methodologies and improvements to this area of risk needs assessments. And again, remember that for some people, improving risk and needs assessments is not something that many people are doing. They don't know, I think, they don't understand its power. And again, you asked that question first at the beginning of this podcast. What's the importance of that risk and needs assessment? I'm going to reiterate that it's everything. It's the foundational piece to how you understand who you're dealing with. Without it, you don't have that understanding, and that's dangerous, and you'll be ineffective. So then to go forward, to make that risk and needs assessment system more and more accurate, more less and less biased, more and more useful in terms of dynamic items, think about growing the units or the data that you're going to consume in order to continue to find out more about a person. And we're going to continue to find out more and more items are correlated with program, with rehabilitation, with violence, with reentry, with, you know, return, with all of the things we're trying to manage. More and more data becomes available in this age, and training models on more and more data just makes it more accurate. And doing it more and more often, but automated in an automated system, so that it's not taking staff time all the time to sit down and punch through it, to give them more and more automation of those items and evaluation of those items is important. And there's a lot of innovation happening with how to collect, consume, analyze, and produce more decision-making with it.
I have one that's different. It's not related necessarily directly to the assessment, although uses the assessment information. I'd like to see how it's used change a little bit, particularly in the prison setting. What we've found, I think, in recent years doing these customizations in large systems over and over again, is that many of the indicators that tell us whether or not somebody is going to reoffend, and particularly reoffend violently, are the same indicators that are telling us whether or not people are likely to commit violence while they're inside prison. Shouldn't be a big surprise, right? Violence or violent behavior is a crime, whether it's happening in prison or out in the community. But because of that, we also, it helps to sort of reinforce or, you know, it helps. Yeah, I think it helps to reinforce that we have the information available to us to help program those folks that are sitting inside prison to help reduce the likelihood that they actually hurt people while they're inside. So I'd like to be able to be using our system more. And Pennsylvania is actually working on some of this or looking at examining how they can pilot it in certain situations, but identifying certain populations that are likely to engage in violence while incarcerated, and then provide some type of programming to reduce that likelihood so that hopefully we can reduce the violent climates that are in prisons throughout the country, which gives us better possibilities for how we program them. It makes things more effective moving forward and probably reduces the likelihood that they reoffend once they get out. So I'd like to see how it's used and how it's used particularly for programming change a little bit as we move forward.
Very interesting. I think you put it best, Sean. You mentioned the data being there, and just like the Oakland A's and the whole Moneyball situation, the data being there and being looked at and analyzed effectively to make sound decisions, maybe two different things, and marrying those two sides of the coin will lead to better decision making. Before I let you go, we are short on time. Is there anything that I should have asked you about Vantage, the strong R, that I didn't?
Well, I think that what I would say that you asked some really good questions. I think what we're entering now in is an age of AI and artificial intelligence, and people trying to understand sort of how to use more and more data type tools, whether it be big data, whether it be machine learning, whether it be AI. And I think that people are going to have to grapple with that. It's just coming, whether sort of anybody likes it or not. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about issues around liberty and the criminal justice system and correctional care, I think people are going to need to be very careful, but also be very purposeful and very intentional about how they're going to use some of these models that are just being built almost in instantaneous, rapid fashion. And it's happening so quickly and it's changing so rapidly that I think there's going to be some real utility. I think there's going to be some real benefits and some real improvements out of some of that work. And it's just going to have to be handled very responsibly. So I think that's and we're involved in that work now, looking at ways and places in which that might improve the system, and also being careful to not to act responsibly and think about where that might not be useful or might not be appropriate. So I think that's a big piece of the next 10 years.
Yeah, I would just add to that risk and needs assessments have been going strong for the last 40 years. But a lot of contemporary tools have sort of stopped evolving. And I think there's a new age that's happening since probably post 2010, to where a new set of tool developers, a new set of software providers are trying to make things better and more efficient. And I think you're going to see that coming into play within the next 5 to 10 years.
Great. One last question for me before I let you go. You mentioned dynamic and static factors. Can you tell the audience what the difference is between those two?
Oh, sure. Sorry. Sometimes I don't give the background. Static factors are those things that do not change. Typically, people, when you talk about static factors, are thinking about criminal history indicators. You know, how many prior felonies do I have? How many prior weapons offenses do I have? Those things can't reduce over time. They can only gain in terms of you committing more of those offenses. Dynamic factors are those elements that can increase or decrease over time. So your use of drugs and alcohol, employment and how long you've been employed, your attitudes and behaviors, your aggression tendencies, you know, your social support systems, all of these things can increase or decrease over time. And those needs assessment items or those dynamic items typically are those that you target with programming and interventions. And research has found that if you're able to reduce those, you reduce recidivism. They've also found that if you increase those needs, you tend to have increases in recidivism. So unlike those static factors that just sort of stay static in time and don't move, you can actually have an impact on desistance and redemption when it comes to dynamic indicators.
Reduced recidivism, safer communities, the name of the game. We're out of time. We have to leave it there. Dr. Zachary Hamilton, University of Nebraska, Sean Hossman, Marjorie Rist, Vantage, thank you for joining us on Pracademically Speaking.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.